Well, it's an honor and a privilege to be here with you this morning. Thank you so much. Yes, it is. It's working. We have the technology. It's a wonderful privilege to be here with you all and to show you what the Lord has been doing in Uganda at the African Bible University. My name is Kurt Schimke. This is my wonderful wife, Marlene.
I can't even say that.
Even though my daughter Zoe wants to say that she's Wonder Woman, this is Wonder Woman right here. So, by the way, before we get started, you're going to meet my kids here on the screen in a minute. There's Zoe. Put up your hand, Zoe. And there's Anna. There's Nick. And Lexi disappeared somewhere, the six-year-old.
Oh, we sold her.
Okay, yeah, well, and she was probably happy, too. Yeah. My natural...
She had a new dress on, so that we got a great price.
My natural diplomat. All right, well, as you can see in the red dot in front of you is where we all stay. I like to do that because sometimes people are geographically deficient. And so we live on the equator at a roughly 4,000-foot elevation, so it may get warm, but it doesn't get too terribly humid or too terribly warm. There's 54 recognized tribal groups and language groups in Uganda. Very colorful. Every tribe has a dance. Every tribe has a dress. It's fun. And any one given day on the APU campus, you'll hear 10 different languages. That's why we had to pick one. It's called English. It's good for me.
Yay.
It works for me. Even baskets can be unique to a region and unique to a specific purpose, such as curdled milk or certain cheeses or flours and millet and what have you. A land of extremes. You've got brilliant homes, Mercedes and Hummers driving down the street, Porsches even, and this. The middle class is not too well developed. If you go to the grocery store here in Pueblo, what do you pay for all those veggies?
What? 30?
Pineapple is $2.98.
Okay. there is a good penny pincher right there. What, 40 bucks?
30.
30 to 40, yeah. Uganda is a breadbasket, and it's a privilege for us to live there. There's a lot of great fresh produce. The local markets where we get our produce don't have to say organic on them with a special little sticker because they just are. So that's a neat deal. So that's one benefit. What do you see on the back of that taxi?
Big slams.
I've taught a course on the Psalms before, but never the slams. Maybe my Hebrew is weak. I don't know. This is a very bright and intelligent culture. They're great, hardworking people, but English is a second language. It's not a primary language. So every once in a while, you'll see this. And so as a result, we get to educate people. And it is, of course, as Sir Winston Churchill called it, the Pearl of Africa. It's gorgeous, it's brilliant, and it's no wonder it's a tourist destination. It's kind of funny to live in a tourist town, but it's beautiful, and that aspect of it, it's very rewarding, wonderful weather. We have the privilege of serving at the African Bible University, and the wonderful folks standing next to us are our relatives, my in-laws, Marlene's parents from Colorado. So we have a few Coloradans. It's a pretty rare thing to find a Coloradan in the Uganda, but we had that privilege about a year ago. Our beloved boss is Dr. O. Palmer Robertson, who's the Vice Chancellor, and his wife, Joanna, is the Registrar, and they're currently in Uganda, serving there for the year. Marlene can speak to her.
We'd just like to give you an overview of what our lives look like. Some of you will remember us from, I think it was 4 years ago, when we got to speak and give a little overview of what we do, but we'd just like to come and update you on what does it look like in our day-to-day lives. So, one of the roles that I play on campus, we live where we work. We're on a campus, and our home is on the campus, so we are in close proximity to all the students. We get to do, you know, more one-on-one discipleship, relationships, small groups with them, which is a real benefit and strength of our campus. I do teach speech communication, so I teach one class every semester. While my husband will show you all the classes he teaches and the other stuff that he does, he's very much full-time there. Majority of the time we've been in Uganda, I've homeschooled. The last couple of years, we've had kind of a mixture of the kids going to a Christian school in town and me homeschooling some of them. Mm. But it's been very busy and rewarding at the same time. In the last 3 years, 2 years, 3 years, I've taught Bible and done some teacher training at a little kindergarten around the corner from our campus. So just off campus and not far, about a mile or two from where we live. And this place is called Malaika, which in Swahili means angel. So they call their kids little angels, but they know they're not. She's really funny.
Not to a raving Calvinist or not. No.
Lexi would come and join me, and so she would participate in the Malaika kindergarten classes while I would go from group to group and teach Bible. Mm-hmm. But I also was able to do some teacher training to the teachers, because a lot of them, their education level may not be as high as what you would expect a teacher to have in a grade school here, for example. So how to communicate with parents was something they struggled with, or how to have classroom management and discipline skills. And so it was really fun, and that was a much more local place where I was able to work and minister and relate to different people. A lot of times, like I said, in our roles on campus, we have had the privilege of mentoring some of these young ladies, in my case, or some of the young men for my husband, and it's been a real joy to see them progress. A lot of these people have come from broken homes, really abusive backgrounds. The women, probably 80-90% of them, have been abused in one way or another by the time they reach our campus. That's a really high statistic.
Yeah.
It's not that unusual in the States or, you know, in the Western world either. We just don't usually know about it as readily sometimes here. And I think the statistics are a little bit different here, thankfully. But these young ladies are a blessing, and they are... It's really fun to see them get to the stage where we get to celebrate their wedding day with them, for example. And we've had the privilege of being in Uganda for 11 years, so we've actually seen some of the results of our work among these students. Instead of just having a year or two where you say, boy, I hope what I did was effective, in some instances, God has been gracious and has allowed us to see the results of our labors. And you don't always see that on the mission field, so that's been a blessing. Mm-hmm. But we've right. been able to do that in some ways.
Yeah, that funny guy behind the mic. We live in a culture that has been taught to respect status and authority. And whether I like it or not, as an American, I'm uncomfortable with status, right? We're trying to create the classless society in the U.S. Well, when you have an event, you actually dress up like I am today. It's a very normal thing, even though I'm doing some outdoor preaching at a particular family conference that we do through a men's ministry. So this is part of it. But as on my status as a teacher, I teach African history, believe it or not, even though I'm the wrong color. I enjoy teaching it, and I'm actually getting a PhD in it these days. I love to teach church history, much less do counseling. In the fourth year of the curriculum, I teach biblical counseling. I also teach leadership, really enjoy that, in the second year courses, Romans and Corinthians, and the Psalms, not the slams, which is really funny. Dr. Robertson spends about half the year normally at near Cambridge University in the Tyndale Library, Tyndale House, working on his next book. He's always working on books, especially through the Psalms. And it's really funny. He says, no, you should teach a course in it while I'm gone. I said, really? I don't have anywhere near the skill in it that you do. But he's asked me to do that, and we grow through it. And the first year that students come, they're really excited, and they're also scared to death, too. It is a huge cultural adjustment to them experience a rigorous four-year college environment program. But it's great. It's tough, but it's good. And so by the time they get to the fourth years, yes, they're burned out, but the light switch begins to turn on. And as a teacher, it's very gratifying to say, oh, I thought you crazy reform folks were full of it, but now, at the end of 4 year, I don't think you're so crazy. And so they begin to piece things together. And they're super excited, as you can see, by the time they get to graduation.
And I don't know if we really described it, but we're a four-year Bible and liberal arts college, basically. So they get a Bible degree on our campus, but they also get a degree in some other area or focus, like communications, business, leadership, community development, education.
Sure, they're very much like
so
a Colorado...
Kind of a dual purpose.
Yeah, sorry. They're very much like a, you know, CSCU, Colorado Springs, you know, Christian University, or a Dort, or a Covenant College. That pattern would make sense. Marlene always wants to talk about the other crazy stuff we do. Missions is messy, and it has a lot of different hats. I have been traveling recently. Recruitment is a bit hard. The concept is a bit of a hard sell in this part of the world. So I've been traveling to Rwanda and Kenya as part of a role to promote the university. Rwanda is in a very aggressive program of becoming an Anglophile country and stepping away from Francophone interests. I'm a gearhead. I started fixing cars when I was 12. I was here in Colorado. In California, I spent 10 years as an aircraft mechanic. I'm also a flight instructor as well. I oversee maintenance of the water well. Me and an OPC guy, we drilled the water well. And of course, you drill it, everybody says, well, if you drilled it, buddy, you got to fix it. You got to maintain it. So I do that as well, but I work with local engineers to keep it running. I coordinate vehicle maintenance. It seems like I'm always fixing cars. Or I've got to the point now where I oversee two mechanics and I tell them how to fix the cars. And they get advice on whatever. I'm in charge of student outreach, evangelism. There's six areas where in the middle of the week of all this good biblical training and good theological stuff, I say, listen, we need to go out there and practice it. Let's put these good ideas to use. And I tell them, go out and make mistakes. Don't be intimidated by who or what and how you're going to do it. Of course you're going to make mistakes. Get out there, make the mistakes. Let's debrief, let's talk about those things. So we do that. I'm in charge of graduation every year. And I do, along other things, I have a men's ministry called a Boda ministry. In that part of the world, a Boda is a motorcycle taxi.
Do they have those in Nigeria?
Yes.
What do they call them there?
Okada.
They're called Piki Piki in Kenya.
Yeah, well, because of the sound, it's automotopia, right? You know, Boda to Boda is essentially a terrible form of English for border to border. Because back in the British colonial days, yes, it was a bicycle that took you from, if you were going from the border, from the Uganda border to the Kenya border, you processed your paperwork and you hired a bicycle to take you the mile that went from one place to the next. It wasn't a singular incident, a singular facility like they have today. And so border to border became Boda Boda. I need a Boda Boda to go there. And so that's what happened. So this is a really fast Boda Boda, you know.
So we'd like to give you an example of what all you can haul on the back of a Boda Boda. It's not just people.
Yes. But one thing we haven't seen is someone take a bath going down the middle of the street. I haven't seen that.
We did see this. This pig was live, and when it started to wiggle, the Boda driver had a hard time keeping it on the road.
Do you guys have the picture of the one with a bucket on his head and a helmet
and handlebars? The chickens were alive, too.
Yeah, the chickens are alive. They always ask you which came first, the chicken or the egg. I don't know the answer to that, but you can haul both of them on the back of the boat. Sometimes the boat cause traffic jams because there are no regulations as far as how wide or narrow or long, and they don't always hang a flag on the edge, so you've got to really watch yourself in traffic.
Yeah, there's a difference between having laws and the rule of law, and can you do that with a car, you know?
And the number of people, we still are not sure how many you can actually squeeze. And these are the small motorcycles, by the way. They're not a Harley Davidson. They're right. Like the tiny little ones that used to be used in the rural places for like mail delivery service or something, right?
Yeah. Let me add something on this. Because you have this kind of unsafe habit, three independent studies have done, 80% of the emergency room cases in the hospitals in Uganda are from this. Motorcycle accidents. Right. We've had students terribly damaged as a result of it, maimed for life as a result. But we do a ministry to the guys who ride these bikes because they're at the center of drug distribution, prostitution, and HIV spread. And so, and these guys always are interactive in their communities. And when these guys are transformed by the gospel and they start sharing their faith with people who ride behind them, you know, it's a radical thing. Say, you're a Christian? You got to be kidding me. You know, and it's a radical transformation. It's a big thing. And so it's exciting to see, and it's transformative. We've been trying for years and years. They have postgraduate programs, and we finally got one approved by the government in business. Mr. Junshu Mitsu, the short guy, and Mr. Marcelo Vieira, the short guy's from Japan, the tall guy's from Brazil, and they're both really strong Christians. How many Japanese kids do you think would get homeschooled in American curriculum and then want to serve the Lord in some capacity? And that's the story behind this guy. The Vieiras are accomplished concert musicians who came to the United States to get their MBA and
got saved,
joined a Reformed church, and now they just want to participate in missions around the world in every way they possibly can. And that's the background of the Africa Business Institute, which is our new postgraduate degree in business. So this is biblical world and life view applied to economics in very practical ways. The students take an entire year to develop a rigorous, world-class business plan and then find the funding. And they're, you can pray for them now. They're towards the end of that year, and they're finding the funding for it. They're looking for the angel investors to help them do it. One of them there was Zippy. It was Zipporah Wanjiku. We call her Zippy. And she was one of our counselees, what have you. An interesting thing, something I didn't anticipate at all, is that these kids, one of the business projects that the kids out of this program wanted to do is to connect this biblical world and life view to the men's ministry with the Bodo Bodas. So they're helping them design an excellent business program in advertising using the motorcycles, because they're everywhere, and they'd be great for advertising, so hopefully. Pray for them. Pray for them as they try to find the investment. Pray that it has business integrity and an effective Christian business as a blending of business and ministry. One of the products of this is Godfrey Kabusu. Godfrey became a Christian before he became the men's ministry, but this really grew him in his faith, and he's been a wonderful aid to ABI as well as the Shimke family, because he's moved us all over the place. But there's a guy who exemplifies what we hope to see happen with the transformation of the gospel in the lives of these men. And it's exciting to see somebody do so well.
Sometimes our kids pipe up and tell you, or correct us, on what they do on campus and what their lives are like. But we just want to give you a glimpse of what their life is like growing up in Uganda as well. So our children over the course of the years have been able to really make some good friendships and participate on campus with the students in a variety of ways. We have chapel every day of the week, and our kids have been allowed to participate in some of the musical presentations at the chapel service times, and so they've enjoyed interacting with the students in a variety of ways, like I said. In the last couple of years, the kids have participated at a British international Christian school, and so they've had more interaction with other students in group activities, like choir, science projects, which it's a little harder to do one-on-one at home, especially when your mom is not a science teacher. Zoe loves science, and so she had a ball when they started dissecting things at the school. Drama. The kids have all acted in a variety of plays. Oliver, my girls are jealous because I only got one picture and it was Nick this time, but they've all been in different play settings, and it's been a lot of fun for them to learn that.
Yes. You can talk to Mr. and Mrs. Bumble later on.
That's right. That's right. And sports. Of course, American football is a big deal here, but football in the rest of the world is not football. It's
football!
Soccer. So Nick has had a lot of fun playing soccer on a team at this school, and so the kids have had a variety of activities in their lives growing up. And one of the things that's really neat and dear to our family's life is that a lot of times your children open the doors to ministry opportunities that you would not have otherwise. And I'm sure you can even see that in the areas where you guys all are living and serving and working too. But your children open up doors that you wouldn't have if you were just a couple there by yourselves. And our kids have made some really good friendships with certain students over the years. This young man wants to open an orphanage later on when he graduates from ABU, and he intentionally seeks out younger children and interacts with them and listens to them and wants to learn from them. And this is unique in a culture where children are to be seen and not heard. And they're
works for me.
and you really don't have a voice. So for a young adult to come and listen to a child and say, these people are important, they have ideas, let me see, you know, what they're doing and what their interests are, is really unique. And so he has a different perspective than what his cultural background has raised him with. I told you Lexi got to go to Malaika kindergarten with me a couple days a week. At the end of 1 year, they had a celebration, which was a cultural dance, and every class put on a different dance, and her class was doing the Buganda dance, which is the central Ugandan tribal dance, and she got to learn how to do this unique dance and have a lot of fun doing it. They say white man can't dance, but Lexi was born in Africa, so I think maybe sometimes that's not her. She's proved him wrong.
This white chick can dance.
She has a lot of fun.
So we want to give you a little bit of a picture of what our graduates are doing now. We've had the great privilege of doing this for 11 years, and it's, you don't always see fruit from your ministry. We know that's up to the Lord, but we've had the great privilege of observing some of the people who do this. One of our best graduates is Eddie Ivan Koeda, who's a TV personality there in Uganda, but has a great role as a leadership trainer and mentor through John Maxwell's organization, and does it in East Africa as well as South Africa as well. The gentleman standing next to me is from Rwanda. His name is John Indahiro. And John really came from a very strong Pentecostal background, but really grabbed the Reformed faith while at ABU. Something you should know is about 50 to 60% of my students are Pentecostal. Not all of them get it. They might fight you all the way through. But some guys do change, and they have an effective ministry. John worked together with some other folks to start a Bible school in Kigali, and he's doing an effective job. And the way he leads his home and loves his wife is very unique in that culture, and it is fun to watch and see. The gentleman standing next to him is Robert Kalenzi. Kalenzi is heading up the ABI project that's working with the Boda Boda, but he's also an effective preacher and a great heart for ministry. He's got that unusual combination of great preaching skills along with business skills, which I don't even qualify for. So Robert's a really neat guy, and it's amazing to see how the Lord's going to use him. Another guy came from Congo, came from a very difficult background, and I always admire the guys who live in the big city and enjoy Kampala and all that it has to offer, but still want to go back to the village. And Upoki Bitum went back to work with the Pygmies in northeastern Congo. And the people who are standing around him are not children, those are adults. And so he went back there, and he's solidly reformed and really doing some excellent work, building schools, churches, and the like, but really trying to meet the needs that are there. Completely gospel-focused, and it's wonderful to see him do it. I think when we were here 4 years ago, we did talk about this couple. We wanted to brief you again about who they are and what they do. Marlene spends quite a bit of time counseling and encouraging Daniel and Jalia, but their business and their ministry has really grown and expanded. Marlene can speak to that.
So this couple had art degrees before they came to ABU, and they wanted to get the theological training and background to go along with that. So once they completed their studies at ABU, they wanted to do business as ministry. That was always their focus, and that was always their goal. And they developed this business of making paper beads. Eventually, they got connected to Noonday Collection, which is a company that sells in the U.S. and maybe Canada. And so they make really high-quality paper beads. We put a little display table up that Anna can answer questions about later if you want to look at that. And we brought some paper beads from Uganda. But the ones that this couple makes are quality assurance controlled, you know, and they're very customized for what this company wants to sell. And the reason they did that is not to make a ton of money so they could go build a big house or so they can drive a big car in Uganda, but they wanted to transform as many families' circumstances as possible. They both came from very impoverished backgrounds, Jehovah's Witness and Muslim backgrounds, were kicked out of their homes when they became Christians, and just a lot of different challenges to them growing up personally. And they have about 350 women and families that work for them now in this paper bead making business. So they, and their goal is to give these people a sustainable income, not just a little bit, not just paying them pennies to make these necklaces, but to make their family be able to sustain their children. And a lot of the people that work for them are women whose husbands have died or who
mostly
are
left,
single moms for whatever reasons, and they're trying to raise their own kids. And so they really have a difficult time without having an education to be able to sustain a family life. So that's their goal, and they've been largely successful. They're just a really neat testimony. And the interesting thing about it is Daniel in particular, who preaches to the group every single day, they hear an hour sermon before they start making the paper beads. Every single day. It doesn't matter if the people are from an animistic background or Muslim or atheist or whatever, they get to hear the gospel every day when they work at this place, and a lot of them have come to know the Lord. A lot of Jalia's Muslim family have gotten to know the Lord through their testimony. There was something else I was going to say about that, but I can't remember.
It's dynamic. Nobody knows what expositional preaching is in this part of the world. And so students, Daniel and some of the students who've graduated from ABU have been hired by him, and so they come. So they come to work every morning, and the first thing they do before they go get to work is they have this worship time, they have this devotional time, and so they get to hear line by line, precept upon precept, good preaching, and that's how many people come to them. Of course, right? That's what you expect, and it's just neat to see it happen.
Well, and I have to say about this couple, too, we could tell you stories about the heartaches of ministry as well. We had a really tough spring semester before we came back to the U.S. You know, January... the kids may not say this, but my husband and I were like, it's time for a break in January, and we knew we weren't coming back until June. So we've got a lot of challenges ministry-wise as well, and we're not trying to just sugarcoat it and say that there's none of that, because there definitely is. But this couple has impressed us so much. Daniel is very humble. He doesn't have a big head about, you know, how successful they've become, and they continue to do the work so that they can bless others. And we're just really impressed and proud with this, you know, to see what's happening. And again, as far as like mirroring a Christian relationship and a family life in front of a culture that has so many challenges where that's not upheld. For example, adultery is just a common thing. A lot of those types of relationships, they're just winked at over there. And so for Daniel to be faithful to his wife and to minister alongside of her, and just the way that they interact as a couple is a huge testimony to people. And one time I asked him, Daniel, how is it that you guys get this and so many of our students don't? And he said, you've got to be radical to be a Christian here. You've got to have a radically different life than what the culture tells you. And so here's just one of our shining examples of some people who've grasped the gospel, like my husband said, and have applied it in their cultural context, and it's attractive. Yeah. People want to be there. They want to work for them. So yeah, it's really neat.
Listen, you can teach and teach and preach and have your counseling, do your relationships, all that hard work, and you know in reality a lot of people just won't grasp that our rebellious hearts are stubborn and the Holy Spirit has to do his work, you don't know it, but I think we all need to know every once in a while it happens, it works, the Holy Spirit does reveal himself and he does work powerfully in the lives of others. And
I also work for him.
Yeah.
Well, I rolled paper beads for him as well. Yeah. So if you came to visit us in Uganda, we just wanted to give you a glimpse of a couple things that you might see or experience while you were over there.
No, Jack Sparrow hadn't moved to Uganda.
Uganda is a very unique and diverse land, like my husband said. There's creatures that you would not find here. Some of the places in the south, we have these unique, I know there's scorpions in southern Texas, for example, and into Mexico and things like that, but you see a lot of different creatures that I didn't see growing up in Colorado in Uganda. We've had friends and visitors come for short term sometimes. We offer them some of the local dishes. Does anybody know what this is?
Grasshoppers?
Yeah,
grasshoppers.
Well done.
So,
they're not bad. They're not
bad.
Once you get past the legs.
Yeah, they take the legs and the wings off. Thank
you. Back legs, Mom.
Okay, well, only the back
legs. Okay.
Uganda is very colorful. When you go to the market, they have stacked, they're very creative and, beautiful land and beautiful people. They stack up all the tomatoes. I don't think we do this in our grocery stores here, near as well as some of these other foreign places. So it's just fun to see and experience.
Wow.
Of course, you might have things that delay your traffic there that... So I grew up in eastern Colorado, and once in a while when we moved cattle, I have to tell you, we would move cattle across the street. I don't know if any of you know, across the dirt street. Is it called a street? I don't know. Anyway, and the traffic would stop, but it's very few people to stop traffic out there. But anyway, these cattle are from the north, and they have the longhorns, like the Texas longhorns, but they're an Acholi?
Ancole.
They call them Ancole cattle.
Ancole.
And once in a while, you'll see them or goats or any variety of things blocking the main highways, and you'll have to stop. It's just kind of an interesting thing. I understand that... do I dare use this? Once in a while, we say TIA, which means this is Africa. And sometimes you see things in Africa that you would only see outside of the United States, at least, shall I say. I know a lot of third world countries have similarities, but... We don't often see people riding on top of these big loads, but in Africa it's a very common thing. Just another day in Africa. They are reintroducing this white rhino. It became extinct in Uganda, and they actually brought one from Florida and started repopulating them. They're the tamer version, so we got close enough to take this photo, actually.
Yeah, we were standing in the grass when we took that photo 30 feet away. So.
We haven't done a lot of tourist things in Uganda, but when my parents came over for the first and probably the only time that they'll be over... which was last year, we did do one safari and got to see a little bit of the wildlife. So there are other countries in Africa that are known for the wildlife, like Kenya, Tanzania, South Africa, but there is quite a bit in northern Uganda.
It's a little bit at least, yeah.
There are some things.
We took that picture.
Thankfully, we were in a car at the time.
Yes. But the biggest thing that it's been impressed upon us the whole time that we've been living and serving in Uganda and in Africa, is that the people are the same around the world. We all struggle with the same sin issues. We all struggle with the same, we have the same hopes, the same desires for our families, for our livelihood. And our cultural background might be different, but when you get to know the people, they're really precious. And it's fun to interact with people who, like this slide says, need a savior just like you and I. And it's been a privilege to serve there. Your church has been one of our supporting churches, and we'd love to come back and just give you a glimpse of what you are doing through us in East Africa. It's been a real joy to serve there. And we are so thankful to be in partnership with you guys, because we know that we wouldn't be able to do what we do unless you were alongside of us. So thank you very much for being able to support people in many different parts of the world and have a heart for ministry.
Yeah, it's an act of faith, isn't it, to support missionaries? Because, you know, it can get messy. It's not easy. It's not easy, but the Lord is gracious. He promises that wherever his word will go out, it will not come back void. And it's a great blessing. People ask me, what gets you out of bed in the morning? And I'll tell you, it's those few students where the spark is alive and you see them putting things together. The aha moments are going on. And that's why you're there. And to equip the next generation of people who will serve the Lord faithfully with a complete commitment to the authority of the Scriptures and the truth found in God's Word. So, you guys have been listening to us. I should have said before, ahead of time, you guys can put up your hand any old little pea-picking time you want.
If we can turn the lights on.
Yeah, you guys got questions, please. Let me answer your questions.
Or at least
if I have an answer.
We need to let everybody wake up if they fall asleep.
Yeah, exactly. I'm up late last night.
And before the questions, just so you're aware, we're in the States for a year. My husband's working on his doctorate. A lot of times people say, what can we pray for? So that's one major prayer request. He needs to get his doctorate mostly nailed down and sent off by next June. So we are in Colorado Springs, based in Colorado Springs, and have rented a place there from supporters that are friends of ours. And so we'll be around. And it's nice to have a year off from our work there. The kids are in school for a whole school year at a homeschool co-op situation, and so that's our set of circumstances. So it's good to have a chance to come down and be with you.
Questions? Clear as mud? Yes, ma'am.
So about how many students do you have all together, and then how many start and actually graduate?
That is a very good question. Currently, I believe we've got about 135 students. And I think our graduation rate is pretty high. Would you say about 95%, something like that?
I'm not sure if it's quite that high.
But it's different. Well, university education is only about 15% of the population, something like that. There are only 9 accredited universities in the country of 40 million people. And we're very close to becoming the 10th accredited university. We operate under a provisional license. So when a student gets there and they really qualify and they grasp it, if they can make it through the first semester, they're pretty much in the system. I would not credit our great skill at, of course, we do everything that we can to bring up the skill so that they can manage a university level of education, but their high school system is fairly good. They have an exit exam out of high school. And depending upon how you score on that, it's a cutoff point. Either you have this level, and that allows you into university, or you don't. And that is it. No ifs, ands, or buts. Done. So people work extremely hard. So if you got somebody who, according to the government, qualifies for high school, most of the time they can handle it. Now, we have an entrance exam also that we're required to have, and we have to send quite a few people away. And so as a result, our entrance exam process helps us identify those who can deal with it. A lot of it has to do with financing. If a student can't make it, a lot of times it's not because of ability, it's financing. So we're doing our level best to find scholarships for those that we can. Our scholarship level is at about 50%, I'd want to say. I wish it was a little less than that, but we're doing our level best to raise those funds that we can to keep kids in the system. Great question, thank you. Yes, ma'am. Sure. I was having a discussion with Randy and Don a little bit about terrorism. Terrorism kind of got a bit ugly in 2014, 2015 in the region. Thankfully, the government put some very harsh protocols in place to try to deal with it. The potential is there, but it's not nearly as gotten quiet, and that's because basically the military has spies everywhere, and if you're a terrorist or you're part of a terrorist influencer network, you just disappear. You know, the niceties of the rule of law and jurisprudence sometimes just get in the way, as far as they're concerned. So, great question. Yeah,
so we're still safe. So
yeah. By and large, we had a moment in 20. Yeah, we had a moment in 2015 where we began to wonder if it was becoming unsafe. But the Lord, thankfully, managed to provide us some ways to deal with it. So, yes, sir.
What's the unemployment rate over there, and what are the main some of the more the better jobs that people can hope for once they graduate?
Sure.
I didn't phrase that very well. But
no, I'll do my level best, and if I miss the mark, feel free to tell me. You have roughly 50% unemployment. In certain seasons of the year, it can go high as 70%. So it's pretty rough. Pretty rough out there. Part of that is the average age is 51 years old. Average lifespan is 51 years old. The mean average age is 15 and a half. It's a very young population. So the younger people are having scrambling around trying to find the funding to actually just make it through school, and diseases and what have you with a dangerous life are making it difficult. So when they get out of university, of course, everybody wants an office job where they can put their intellect and their skills together. But it's a false dichotomy. It's a false idol that's been set up. You know, unfortunately, with the modern level of education, it doesn't encourage hard work. And so a lot of people go out there and says, 95% of the economy is agrarian. And so when you have that, you know, you came off of the farm and baby, you don't want to go back. But the problem is most people don't want to go back to that life, and they say, no, I want to do an office job, or I want to be an engineer, and I want to do whatever. So you find that the majority of people with some level of education want to go back into the education sector and at least help out this younger generation that is at least trying to get through the high school and primary school phases. So that's what you find a lot of. Sure, there are engineering jobs, but industrialization has been very, very slow. That's going to be accelerated to a certain extent because of all the Chinese investment that's coming in, which frightens me to death at the same time. It's nice to see all the new equipment coming in, but what the Chinese will exact from these African nations as a result of 50-year bond issues or 50-year loans for the equipment and for the roads that they're building is just, it's crazy as far as I'm concerned. But that's basically what you're up against. It's hard. It is grinding poverty, and you see horrible things on a regular basis. It's one of the things that does grate on your soul after a while. People live in squalor on a typical basis. 80% of the population is below international standards for poverty level. That's why you see the two extremes. You know, you see this Hummer driving down the road and say, good night, where did this Hummer come from? Well, a lot of times it's a Pentecostal preacher. I'm not kidding. And I see more than one Hummer, you know, and what have you. And you know,
Psalm 121 on the license.
Yeah, of course, yes. I lift my eyes into the hills. Where does my money come from? Well, it comes from my congregation. You know, hallelujah. Anyway, it's awful. It's awful.
The unique thing about some of these countries, and Uganda is not the least of them, is there's so many opportunities for an entrepreneur to take something and make a business out of it. Like, there's businesses that make things out of what is usually refuse, like banana leaves or the tops of pineapples. They make paper. There's a company that came in from the French, I believe, and they did one thing right? But anyway, they started a company where they would flatten these waste items from produce and make paper out of them. They sell like
paper, special types
of paper.
Artisan.
Picture frames and just, you know, picture albums and neat stuff. So when people, that's why the business program is kind of exciting, because if people get an idea and use their creativity and become entrepreneurs, there's a lot of potential in Uganda.
You got Ellie Poo
Have you guys seen the Ellie Poo papers out of Africa?
No.
I doubt about it. They make it out of, to try and save the elephants and not just their tusks.
Oh, for crying out loud. Okay, okay.
Poo paper.
All right. Oh, that's hilarious.
My students, I'll put a pass on poo paper, and they won't
touch
it.
I love it. That is awesome. That is too good. That is too good.
Our daughter, Sarah, found it for us.
That is awesome.
You can go there, Ellie Poo.
There's potential there.
That is too good. More questions. These are great questions. Keep them coming.
So when you are accredited, do you see that there will be a big influx in student loads?
There should be. You know, other experience of other universities have taught us that. We are unique, though. Yeah, we are unique. It's like when people say, you need to really take Bible off of the university name there. I'm saying, are you kidding? That's our raison d'etre. That's why we get out of bed in the morning. So you'll have those issues as well. It will help out a lot. Remember, this is a status-oriented society. So to have the imprimatur of the government really says, you guys are okay. And when you got this going on, it's a problem. It is. Whether I like it or not, there's racial tension and what have you. And if I know that as a foreign institution to be submissive to the government, it bridges over a lot of issues. And so we really want that. And we've always wanted to do that. It holds our feet to the fire culturally and academically, and it's good for us. You know, and as Christians, I think we should do things with excellence. I really do. So, yeah. Great question. Thank you. Believe me, that is on my brain all the time. Got the accreditation. But it's political. That's a big part. That's why we ask people to pray. You've got to change the hearts and minds. There are Muslims on the National Council for Higher Education, the board that supervises this. And they don't want us. They flat out told us, we do not want you to get accredited. You know, government officials aren't supposed to say that, right? You know, thankfully, the head of the board now is a Christian, and he seems to be willing to work with us, but it's a hard slog. It's a difficult thing to work through. Politics. Yes, ma'am.
Talk about English as the national language.
Sure. In 1962, when they achieved their independence, they, as an independent government, chose to have English as the language of business and of government. So when children go to primary school, by the time of about second or third grade, then the curriculum is almost entirely done in English. And so they do their level best to produce for it, but it's a difficult thing. As time goes on, it seems like maintaining a high level of English standard is a difficult thing to do. But you can go almost anywhere, go to a grocery store, and at least the level of English comprehension will be so that you can generally get around, but not perfectly. Through the men's ministry, I've learned a fair amount of Luganda, which is the main language in central Uganda, and Swahili. And so when I run into difficulties, I can say something in Luganda, and they say, oh, hey, you're an unusual white person. You actually understand me. So it bridges a lot of things. And it's relationally good, too. You know, like any other thing in history that you find, is why did the reformers begin to translate the scriptures into local languages? You know, we went to Germany and we went to the very room where Luther was translating the New Testament. And why do that? Because the language of the heart and the soul. And so that's why we encourage our students to say, yes, we're going to educate you in a certain level of English, but only because we want to introduce you to all of this great theological source material. And we know that you're going to preach in local languages. So do the translation. And that's a lot to ask of somebody. You know, the reformers had to do that. And we know we're asking that of our students to do the same reason. So that's a huge item for prayer. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, yeah.
Almost all of them in the region have been. Wycliffe is still, they have an office in Entebbe, and they're still pursuing a few remaining languages to, you know, most of the time it's the New Testament that gets down first, and then later on the Old Testament, and they're finalizing on some Old Testament stuff. A lot of verbal stuff is going on, too.
We need to let people go for a second time. But we'll be around and we'll be here for the potluck, so feel free to catch us if you've got other questions. Thanks for your time this morning.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. It's a great honor.